Fire Radio. The phone lines are open at 530-710-0765. And now, Free Fire Radio is about to commence.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Carl Lindebot, and welcome to Free Fire Radio here from 2143 Hilltop Drive at Tobacco and Brew. Not only do we have a place here for people to come and have a town hall meeting, we also have lunch here. So stop on down, come visit us, have lunch, or give us a call at 530-710-0765.
Well, we'd also like to thank the hosts of this afternoon. Every time we do Friday here, we want to thank Joe and Shelley, who have taken this room and painted it and turned it into a forum, place where you can have meetings and we can have forums like we're doing this afternoon. As we begin, we want to thank you once again for always tuning into freefireradio.com. We're building our internet base. We're building our Free Fire media. We have some announcements that in the next week or so that are very, very exciting. I think you'll all be excited to be part of that family with us. And as we begin, we have also, besides our very special guest, Rick Keene, we want to be the first people to announce, really, on the internet, someone who's in the house that has just become, are you ready? Ta-da! The mayor of Reading! Yay! Patrick Jones!
Patrick, come on up.
Come on up and say a word.
Well, thank you, Linda. It is an honor and a pleasure to be the mayor of Reading and a place where I grew up. And, growing up here and working in a small family business and then, maybe about 10 years ago getting involved in politics, it was a tough road for me. I ran for council in 2002 and came in dead last. And that was pretty tough. And then I ran again in 2004, came in dead last again. Really started thinking this probably wasn't my line of work, but I'm pretty stubborn, so I ran again in 2006 and eventually did win and then worked my way up to be mayor today. And so while I'm very pleased about that, we have a lot of work to do this year. With declining revenues, it's going to be a very tough year, but I'm up for the challenge, and I believe with good, sound policies moving forward in this next year, we're going to have some real opportunities. And so I'm very optimistic and very happy to be here. I can't say enough about Carl and Linda and what they've done for Northern California. Their patriotic spirit has been just a huge plus for this area. I can't tell you how many times where I turn on to a local talk show and don't get that sense of someone that really cares about America and about California and about Reading, and these two here do that. So I thank them very much. Happy to be here.
Well, thanks a lot, Patrick. We're going to...
And we also shop at Jones Fort.
The thing, we're going to have Patrick on, too, because there are some huge problems facing us up here in the North State. And that's what we're going to be talking about to Rick Keene about, what his plans are for doing. Before we start that, because we have a few minutes, I'd just like to make a political statement. The President of the United States came on the air the other day, and he talked about what we're doing with Afghanistan, how they're going to put 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan, which I applaud. I think that when you kind of tie it to a timeline, I hope he means is if everything is perfect, we can start bringing people out in 18 months. If he means we're going to start bringing people out in 18 months, I've got a severe problem with that. And one of the other things, too, is they're saying this surge is going to work. And they're getting behind that. And to me, I find it just a little disingenuous on their part that for years they fought against what Bush was doing and they voted against the Bush surge in Iraq. And now that it worked, now it has become their strategy. I find that amusing, and I hope that they will follow it through to the end, to victory, and not just use it as a way of getting through the 2012 elections.
Well, I have to share, along with those lines, a feeling, a very sincere feeling I have in my heart. And that is, for instance, yesterday I was in a shop, a local shop owner here. We were talking about Not that I ever want to bash our president. I don't believe in doing that. I think that we need to support, we need to be Americans and do what we can to become a better community, a bigger community, and have that kind of spirit. However, I have an issue. And my problem is, how can some, I wonder how the groups, the boots on the ground, as you call them, feel about having a commander in chief who's never served in a war or ever been in combat. And I've not been in that situation. You have, and I wonder how those men and women feel that they have to call this person who is the president of our United States, which is a political forum, commander in chief, and take orders from that commander in chief. I don't know. Is it me, or how do you think in general people feel that are serving?
Well, you know, there's a term that people use. It's called chicken hawks. That they are more than, those are people that have never served in the military or in combat. And that's two different groups of people. There's people that could have served, you know, that served in the military but never went into combat just because they were in the wrong spot at the wrong time or the right spot at the right time. But they have, at least they have experience in the military. What we've seen since, I believe, I think Ford was in, Carter was in, Reagan was in during World War II. I'm not sure he saw combat, but he was in during World War II. Of course, you know, the original Bush was a fighter pilot and was in and shot down. I believe then at that point, Kennedy before that, but Clinton had not been in. And after Clinton, you had George Bush II, who had been in the National Guard, and then and now Obama, who has not been in any type. And I don't, you know, does that bother me? Not so much because they haven't been there. What's scary though is that many of their advisors, their closest advisors, have never been in the military. And that is the scary part. And if you look at the number of people that have been in the Obama administration in the cabinet, I think it's the lowest number in decades who have been in private business. And that is scary. I think it's only like 10% of them have actually had a job in private business. The rest are academics and this. And I think that's one of the problems we're facing right now. But that doesn't bring, you know, and that kind of is a start in the things that are facing California right now. And our guest is somebody who says he can fix that. So, Assemblyman Rick Keene.
Put your hands together for Rick Keene.
Hey, welcome aboard.
Well, Carl, I wish I could fix that. I mean, I think that's the big question is the direction that we're heading the right direction? And do we need to change direction if we really want to see a change? So, but certainly I'd like to be a part of that, that's for sure.
Well, I think people need to get to know who you are. I know you were born in Hay Fork. The big city of Hay Fork. And since you have all your teeth, you got through a...
Right.
Oh, come on, that was just a joke, all right? All right? Hey, this is our show. This is about as politically right. correct as you're going to get, okay? No, I'm just kidding. But you're a local. A lot of people don't realize that. They probably think you're from the South someplace, or we call them Flatlanders.
That's right. Well, we call in Hay Fork, we call Redding Flatlanders. So.
Oh. Okay.
Actually, Redding was the big city when I was growing up. My dad was a logger up in Hay Fork. I grew up in a logging family. My granddad, my uncles, my brothers were loggers. I logged one summer on a skyline operation as a choker setter, so that was indeed my background. And we loved Redding. Redding was the place that we would come to actually get our teeth fixed when we'd lose our teeth, so that was good.
Well, you know, it's easy to lose teeth when you're in real jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, that just happens like that. I mean, you run into things. I mean, you're working on a drag line or you're working someplace, you get smacked in the face, and guess what? You're going to lose a tooth. You know, I don't trust people personally. I don't have scars on them.
Like this, you mean?
Well, that helps. That's right. That's better than a scar. Okay, we're going to. Okay, hey, well, look, let's run here. Okay.
Thank you so much for being here, by the way, and this is great because we have this great forum. We're going to go in the house and we're going to ask questions. But before you arrived, I was approached by someone at the door who said, please ask these questions because I'm going to ask more. One is from our audience, one of our audience members, is what is your profession?
Well, my profession now is an attorney. I was a UPS driver for 10 years and went to law school at night. My knees started giving me trouble, and I was called as a juror. And in Hay Fork, we never had any lawyers. So I thought, you know what, I don't think I'm going to make it to retirement. So I went ahead and went to school at night. I had two kids and my wife at home and drove a UPS truck for 10 years. And now I practice law, or that's what I...
Okay, and what kind of law?
It's a general practice. I do a little bit of a lot of things. I've had, kind of a jack-of-all-trades, master of none. One of the areas of law that I used to practice was workers' comp, which gave me the opportunity to help rewrite the workers' comp law a few years back when I was in the legislature. But I've had pretty much a general practice.
Great. Okay.
Well,
now,
my first question, that and before anybody else can ask, is what is your overall strategy to try and bring a change to what's going on in the South when we're outnumbered by the infidels, 10 to 1?
Right. I think it's a very good question. First of all, I think you can't really fix things until you realize where we've gone wrong. And I think it's very clear with over 2 million people showing up to Washington, D.C. in the Tea Party movement just to let people know that we have gotten off track as a nation, and that they're not real happy with Republicans or Democrats. And it's primarily not because Republican philosophies, conservative philosophies, aren't right. It's because our leaders have gotten it wrong and that we need to make a change. So the first thing that we have to understand is, what did we do wrong? Otherwise, we're going to repeat it again.
I have a question for you regarding that. Is that wherever we go, we hear so many people say, I'm disgusted, I'm a Republican, I'm a conservative, I'm so frustrated right now, I'm thinking of just going independent.
Right.
What do you say to that?
Well, I would say that there's good reason for them to feel that way. I think that's why you see the strength of the Tea Party movement right now, is that people are saying none of the above. But what they're rejecting is not conservative philosophies. What they're rejecting are the leaders who have walked away from their conservative philosophies and acted like Democrats simply to get elected. I mean, you've got a lot of evidence of that. You see Washington, D.C. with bloated governments, bloated budgets, even under Republican control. You see them doing nothing to close the borders. You see them doing $700 billion bailouts proposed by our president. And even our candidate stopped campaigning to make sure that $700 billion bailout to people who made bad choices in their lives got passed. And that's just this federal level. The state level's been just as bad, with Arnold Schwarzenegger pushing for AB 32, the global warming initiative, and for the two largest tax increases in the state's history, let alone what's gone on with the Second Amendment. I mean, he has done more against the Second Amendment than his Democrat predecessor had done, and he signed the Harvey Milk Day bill as an example of how far off Republicans have gotten off, and I think that's why they're frustrated, and that's why they're saying, you know what, none of the above right now, and I understand their sentiment.
I'm starting to believe that for the California legislature, they believe the Second Amendment is a suggestion, not a right given to us. In the Constitution. Okay. We have questions back here.
Okay, before we go to the audience member, I have a question regarding the fact that you come from a logging family, a logging industry. Mm-hmm. And the question would be then is, if you are elected senator and people, you know how we have so many people that the spotted owl, and if you're in that seat, how are you going to handle extremism when it comes to the spotted owl or the spotted, turkey, the lizard with the gizmachi on him or whatever it is. How are you going to handle that?
Well, I think that's part of the issue. I think part of it is to recognize, like we started out, by what we've done wrong, but also what are we going to do before? I think that we need to go to the people with these issues, and part of it is that we need to make sure that people understand that Republicans have solutions and alternatives, not just saying no to the Democrats' ideas. We need to say no. I'm absolutely unabashedly a pro-life, pro-traditional family, pro-Second Amendment, anti-tax conservative, and we need to make sure that we make those points. But we also have to tell people what our agendas are, and one of them is that we need to have a defensible forest. We need to get out there and make sure we're bringing out enough wood out of our forests to pay for keeping our forests safe. We need to be proactive on addressing these conditions, not just waiting until the Democrats make their bad ideas and reacting to theirs. So that's a piece of what I want to be for.
Great.
You were discussing Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and his failures. Did you not endorse Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger over Senator Tom McClintock in the recall election?
Well, originally I did not. Until it was very clear that Tom McClintock could not win in the last days of the election, he was down by about 15 points in the polls, where Arnold was up in the 40s, and the question is if we split the vote, would we end up with a Cruz Bustamante? At the end of the election, in the last week of the election, I did endorse Arnold Schwarzenegger because I didn't want there to be a Cruz Bustamante. But the issue is that we've all seen that. We've all seen how that played out. It turned out to be a train wreck. I mean, he started out pretty well and did pretty well on repealing the car tax, getting rid of driver's licenses to illegal aliens. He was going to blow up the boxes. But it turned out after about 2 years, the guy, after he lost at the polls with his initiatives, turned out to be a train wreck. And I think that's exactly the lesson we need to learn, that when we get behind people who don't stand true to their conservative convictions, that that's what we end up with. And I think that is a major lesson, I think, to be learned.
I have a question. My name is Donna Ellis. Uh-huh. And my question is, did you, you know, when you vote on the budget, a lot of us have problems with the waste in the budget, and would you comment on if you voted or didn't vote or what part of the budget you voted on and how many times? Yeah.
Right. No, absolutely. The budgets are always a mixed bag. There are about 15 budget bills when you pass a budget. There's a main budget bill and there's a whole series of other bills. All of us voted on part of those or against part of them, depending on what advances we were making on those bills. Obviously, with a Democrat-controlled legislature, we did the best when I did the budget to make sure that we paid down the deficit, which we did. About 75% of the deficit we were able to remove during those first few years when I actually had a role in the budget. And we did it without tax increases. But we couldn't necessarily stop all of the Democrat buyout ideas. And so that's kind of it's one of those things that you have to figure out how far can we go at this point as long as we're moving towards getting our agendas done as well.
Great. Well, you know, what I wanted to say was environmental wackos, but I had to use all those colorful words to knock you off to see if it just... But you were good. You stood strong. Why, I'm sure everybody in this room wants to know, why are you running for senator?
Well, absolutely. And I've given that actually a lot of thought and a lot of prayer. I mean, this place is a mess. There's no question about it. Our country has fallen apart. We are not doing well on any level. Republicans have walked away in many respects from their conservative convictions, and we're paying the price for it. When people start walking away from both parties, when the declined estate party is the largest growing group in the state of California, that means that we have lost the authority to govern. And I'm worried about what I'm seeing at the state level and the federal level, that our leaders aren't getting it. They don't understand. They seem to be saying, the reason you should vote for me is because I'm not as bad as the Democrats. As long as we keep making that case, we're going to continue to lose. I think we have to get back to our conservative convictions. We have to stand by our principles. We need to not get behind liberals when they're running for office. We need to stand with conservatives at every level so that people have a contrast. And we also need to make sure that people are, that we have our own ideas on what we want to do when we, if we get a chance to govern. I mean, that's what Ronald Reagan was about. Ronald Reagan stood up there and gave us a vision for the country. The contract with America gave us a vision for the country, and Republicans have been silent, and that is frustrating. The reason I'm running is to make sure that we have a vision, that we have capable people to carry that vision, and that we can try to put this country back on track. That's why I'm running.
In case you're just tuning in, we are freefireradio.com, and we are here with Rick Keene, who's running for senator. Welcome.
Thank you.
We do have questions from the House.
I think two of the biggest problems in California are, number one, our illegal immigration problem, and number two, the fact that this state is extremely unfriendly to business. How can you help those two problems?
Well, actually, when I was in the legislature, I authored a bill to give people tax breaks if they would actually create jobs in California. And I think that's the kind of ideas that we need to have put into place. We need to start letting businesses know that we are open for business. problem is, obviously, when Gray Davis was governor, we ended up having some of the worst business climates we'd had in the state's history. We actually had a tripling of our power costs and a tripling of our workers' comp premiums in California. We had let businesses know that they were not welcome. Well, people started becoming optimistic. When we made a change in direction in this state, we threw out Gray Davis with the promise we'd have a governor who would be open for business, fix workers' comp, and actually start getting things back on track, which he did for a couple of years. Since then, in the last 5 years, the guy's been terrible again, and we've got to convince the state of California that we are open for business if we expect people to create jobs here. Part of it is to give them incentives to bring jobs here. We had a bill, in fact, in that bill that I carried, it had a $2 billion tax relief to people who would create jobs in California. It got out of the Assembly and did not get out of the Senate, but I authored that bill. We need to be running far more legislation like that, where we let businesses know that we want to see them here. We're going to incentivize them creating jobs if we want them to stay here or to build their businesses here. So that's what I think about that.
Hi, Rick. This is the second time I've gotten to hear you speak. It's good to see you again. Can you hear
Thank
me
you.
Now? And kudos to you for your stand on conservatism. It's good. It's refreshing to hear that. Yeah, but I would like to know, what do you think the problem is with the water problems here in California? What do you think could be done to correct the farmers losing everything down there?
Right. Well, it's very clear. Two-thirds of the state's water falls in the north. We just don't keep enough of it around for the summertime. I mean, it's just that simple. We have plenty of water. We just need to keep it around. We, as Republicans, need to be the pro-water storage party. We need to be unapologetically pro-water storage in every way that we can be pro-water storage. There is no conflict about building dams that actually can have fish go around them and be able to go back and forth. We know how to do that now. They didn't 50 years ago, but we do now. There is no incompatibility with building water storage and having good fish migration and good fisheries. And we just need to be bold about that. We need to take our case to the state of California. Now, all these ideas that I'm just talking about are ideas that I do not believe that if you were to go up to the legislature right now and say, would you do these things, they will do them. They won't do them. We've got to do what President Reagan did. We have to do what Newt Gingrich did. We need to make our case to the people, get the people behind our ideas, get the people supporting where we want to go, and then force the legislature to come along with us. If we expect those yahoos down in Sacramento to wake up and to get this stuff, we're crazy. We've been bringing these suggestions to them for years. They don't want to hear it. We've got to take our message to the people. The issue is building coalitions, and I think the Tea Party movement could be a great carrier for that, building coalitions across this state, letting people know that we want to see the direction of this state change and that we want to, if the people lead, the leaders will follow. That's what I believe needs to be done. It was successful with Ronald Reagan. It was successful with the contract with America, and I think it would be successful again if we are with a single voice making our mission known.
We have another question from an audience member.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Question concerning your oath of office. A few weeks ago, we had the Vice Mayor of Reading in here. He said when he took his oath, he swore to uphold laws. Now then, I believe that's incorrect. You swear to take the oath to uphold the Constitution, and any law that is unconstitutional, you have no requirement to uphold. Your view, please.
Okay. If I have your question right, I want to make sure I'm hearing it correctly. Your question is that in the oath of office, we all state that we uphold the Constitution and that we will not take any actions to undermine the integrity of the Constitution. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do I promise to do that?
Yes.
Yes.
And not enforce laws that are unconstitutional.
To my degree, if I have an ability to do so, absolutely.
Thank you.
But obviously, we live in a partite government where you've got the judiciary going out and doing things that I don't agree with, calling things unconstitutional or calling things constitutional where they're wrong. They're creating them out of whole cloth. We have the executive branch hiring huge numbers of environmental advocates, that are on the public payroll going out and enforcing laws that I think are unconstitutional. And to the degree that I can stop those things, I will stop those things.
Hey, Rick, my question is the 10th Amendment that a lot of the states are pursuing right now. Am I correct on this? Were there anything that's not done by the feds
the reservation
falls to
of
the
rights.
Right.
Right.
Where's California on that?
Well, California legislature has not been sympathetic to that, obviously. I mean, you've got a 60-40 California legislature that Democrats control 60% and 40% of them, and slipping, are Republicans. So I haven't seen them weigh in on that issue specifically. In other parts of the country, they're more enlightened than we are. They actually have people who are going out there trying to push the 10th Amendment as a way of getting the federal government out of the state's business. But those are generally areas where conservatives are controlling the legislatures and the executive branches. And unfortunately, we don't have that condition yet in California, and we need to create that one.
Okay.
I have a question. Okay, because Carl and I do radio, and we talk to many people that come on to think in terms of sound bites. People are tooling in the garage. They're in and out of the car. Who is Rick Keen in a soundbite?
Who is Rick Keen in a soundbite?
Like,
oh my gosh!
Like 5 points.
Well, I think that has to do with the message: is that people without a vision perish. That if Republicans don't create a vision for America, that they can relate in very concise, brief terms, that we will continue to go down the road that we are on now. The problem isn't that people don't understand the Democrats' bad ideas. They're not hearing the good ideas from Republicans. And I think that's what they need to hear from us. We ought to make sure that we settle for no watered-down conservatives. We need conservatives at every level, and we need to stand with conservatives when they stand right and stand against them, like Abraham Lincoln said, when they go wrong. But the second issue is that we have to have ideas of our own. I have five areas that I have some philosophies, and you already covered one of them, which is defensible forests. One area that we ought to take as our case to the people is that we have ideas on how to defend our forests from forest fires and still bring in enough wood to meet the state's needs without importing 80% of our lumber from outside this state. We ought to do both, but Republicans need to advance that. I've got four more if you want me to cover them.
Okay, but we have a phone call coming in.
Let's go to the audience and your question, sir.
Okay, I've been following the scandal over the global warming data, and I was wondering what we could do to encourage our state-supported universities to allow dissenting opinion on and dissenting research.
Well, the global warming issue is one of the biggest boondoggles on Western civilization that has ever happened. I mean, it's very clear. I actually had two of our staff members.
Y2K.
Y2K was the first one. That's right. There you are. The first one was Y2K. I mean, before that was the pet rock, right? That some guy could sell a rock in a box and you pay $5 for it has got to be the most amazing thing.
I have two of those. Does that mean we're not supposed to do that?
Did you buy them?
Twice. I gave them away for presents and people loved them.
There you are. Yeah. Well, we won't say anything about that, Carl. We all. The reality is that I think it's been flawed since the very beginning. The research had never been done. I had two staff members in my office do a case study and go out and actually pull all of the original documentation on global warming and to see, first of all, is it true? Second of all, if it is true, is it man-made? Third of all, are the measures that they're taking going to fix it if it was true? The first one failed. It wasn't true. The data did not indicate that global warming was real. The difficulty is you got all these scientists all standing up there claiming repeatedly over and over, like the Earth is flat, that this is real. And you've got these reactionary liberal politicians that want to ride that bandwagon and use it as a basis for cap and trade and all the other bad ideas, including what the governor's doing with AB 32. So it is starting to unravel in the popular set. There were always many dissenters at the time. There were always many scientists that said, I don't go with that. But they never got voice. They were shouted down by the academians and the folks who were behind this because it wasn't really about global warming. It was about redistribution of wealth. They wanted to take wealth from America and give it to other people because they don't care for this country and they're socialists. That's what it was really about. It wasn't about the actual science because the science didn't indicate what they said it did. In my office, we read it, we briefed it, and it turned out to be false. So you never got to the second question as to whether it's human caused because, first of all, the first question never washed. As an example, Mars was warming at the exact same rate that the Earth was warming at. They don't have any SUVs on Mars. How the heck could human activity be impacting a change in temperature at the same rate on another planet without any human activity that it is here without it being an outside cause? It was not real, and as you now know, for the last 5 years, it's actually been cooling again. So it's been one of the biggest hoaxes, I think, that's ever been perpetuated on America, and I'm hoping that people wake up and start questioning these academics when they make claims like this.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Cheryl, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Do you have a question for Mr. King?
I have one comment and then a question. I'm kind of put out with both Mr. King and Doug LaMalfa for having endorsed Schwarzenegger, and I'll leave it at that. The other thing is I've spoken to both Mr. King and Doug LaMalfa about to internationalize America's freeways. Today there was a new news report from William Lajeunesse from Orange County, and apparently the stimulus plan has transportation funds earmarked specifically for putting toll booths all over California and Texas. 70% of that money is going to fund exactly what the people of Texas fought against on the Trans-Texas Highway. Since both you and Doug have endorsed Meg Whitman, I would appreciate it if you would let her know that the citizenry does not want all those toll booths and that we don't want to turn over our freeways to an international company as a way of paying our debts.
Okay, first of all, let me address the first issue, which is endorsing Meg Whitman.
Yes.
I have never endorsed Meg Whitman, nor would I endorse Meg Whitman.
Oh, okay, great.
I have not endorsed any of these candidates because I think they're all liberals. The fact of the matter is that I'm a none of the above, and I made that clear the other night, Cheryl, I thought, that I have not endorsed anybody else. I did not endorse Doug Osee over Tom McClintock. I have the endorsement of Tom McClintock. I have the endorsement of Sam Onestad, and that's for a good reason. I have always stood by my conservative convictions. I think I had sent you an email as to the issue with Arnold Schwarzenegger when it only became apparent that my candidate, Tom McClintock, could not win. That at the very end, I decided instead of splitting the vote so that we ended up with Bustamante, I ended up in the end supporting Arnold Schwarzenegger, not because he was my candidate, but because it looked like we had no choice and we certainly didn't want a liberal taking over the state.
Hey, Cheryl,
I kind of disagree with your thinking, but you both did it, so. But I'm very concerned about the states going along with these mandates that are now apparently going to be federal government mandated, and I don't get the impression that either you or Doug are aware that this is going on, and I would like to encourage you both in any event to fight this.
Hey, Cheryl, this is Carl. I appreciate your phone call, first of all, because I have not heard of that either, but there is, it's sleight of hand at the Washington, D.C. level, is that look at this hand, but don't notice this hand over here that's shoving it more stuff down on you. I mean, you know, it's great politics on their part, but it's not great for the country.
We're very interested in the party crashers right now.
Yeah, you know, everybody's talking about the party crashers instead of, did you say they want to put toll booths on?
Yes, he was reporting from Orange County, right in front of the tolls, and the comment of the California transportation lady, I can't remember her name, was really interesting. She said the poor people who use their roads will be glad to get rid of the rich people. So this is a classic class division that the liberals use. It's very strange.
Well, you know, there are toll roads down in Southern California, and that they have, but that's not the interstates or the a number of toll roads that I think they're probably going to expand to kind of ease it.
They fully intend to expand, and they're doing it city by city, state by state. Mayor Daley of Chicago already made a deal with Cintra to let them run their highways for 99 years, and that's one of the scary things about this company is that their leases are from anywhere from 75 to 99 years, and the bid on the Texas highways was for 99 years. Illinois has already gone along with it. Indiana took $3.85 billion from Cintra in exchange for running their highways for 75 years.
Right, I understand what you're saying, and I have seen that phenomenon. I think Chicago did the same thing. They took their They took their highways and they actually sold it to a private company because they would get short-term money. And then in this case, I think the group you're talking about is actually not even an American company. It's actually a foreign-held company. And I think I would put that in the same category as letting China control our ports. And there was a discussion about whether or not a Chinese company could buy the port of Long Beach, if I recall, or one of the ports down there.
Part of it had to do with security. Hey, Cheryl, thank you so much for your phone call.
You're welcome. Bye.
Our phone number here is 530-710-0765. Call us and we'll get you on the air.
Yeah, hey, if I could address that, I think I didn't really finish answering the question. I'm completely opposed to it, Cheryl, and as you're listening out there. I think that having outside companies own public facilities and then charging people is the wrong way to go. It is simply short-term thinking that these particular municipalities believe that they can go out there and get people to give them short-term money and then turn over massive parts of public infrastructure to private parties. That is wrong. I think that is a wrong direction. These are public entities. These are public property and should not be in the hands of private companies simply because that people can make a short-term buck as a municipality.
It almost seems like it's kind of that advancing towards the New World Order.
Yeah, it sure looks like it.
We have a question from one of our listeners.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Rick. Ron Largent. Last few days, I've been asked the question, how can I make a difference? And I've addressed that. I made believers out of folks. I'm going to ask you the same question. We are in an area that, in the minds of many in Sacramento, seems to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. You'll be representing Chico and Redding as the major cities, a lot of smaller cities. But what can you do that will be different than what's been done? And before we answer that, I was in another meeting a few weeks ago, and somebody thought of Redding when they heard that I was from Redding. They said, well, isn't that a northern suburb of Sacramento? Now, that's the mindset right. That a lot of people up here, that we're forgotten. Right. And I think we need a representative that's going to make a lot of noise about what's going on, about the water storage. And are you interested in doing that? And I'm talking about rallying people behind you like the Tea Party's been able to do and making a difference. That's right. My question.
Right.
If I can make a small comment on that, after that person from down there said, if we were a northern suburb of Sacramento, did you take out your concealed weapon and smack them? You know, that makes a statement right there. Yeah. Okay,
well,
Rick.
I'll give you two, at least, life perspectives. When I was a kid growing up in Hayfork, we had Little League teams, and we would take our Little League teams once a year down to San Francisco to watch a big league game. All teams. There were four teams in Hayfork. That's all there were. And all these kids would get on a bus and go south. It was a seven-hour drive from Hayfork to San Francisco. We thought, when I was growing up, San Francisco was Southern California. But to people from L.A., they have no idea that anything north of Sacramento exists. And that's the part. If you don't have that perspective, if you don't understand that this is a 22,000-square-mile district that exists almost entirely north of Sacramento, and that our job is to advocate for this region, then you have no business running for this seat. The second issue is you have to have the ability, if you have a vision, you have to have the ability to convince others. I think in part, I did work on the workers' comp reform. I was able to get some folks to help address that issue. I was able to get some levees fixed in Marysville. We finally have them up to 100-year flood protection, which was one of my main platforms when I ran. And I believe we made some progress on the budgets on the good years that I was able to work on the budget of getting the deficit paid down, paying down over $20 billion in debt without raising taxes. So I think that if your voice is right, you can actually get things done. I refuse to believe the idea that there's nothing we can do. There's only two senators north of Sacramento and 25 out of L.A., so we're all stuck. I believe that if you have a proactive, collaborative approach to governance, you can get some things done. But the other issue is that we are not demanding of people who run for office, what are you going to do? People run regurgitating the platitudes that they're hearing on the radio. They're hearing the complaints of people out there. They go into a group and they just repeat what they've heard. Now, that's good. We want them to not be the kind of idiots that are running our state and our nation into the ground. But that's not enough. You have to be proactive about your own ideas. That's why I have these five ideas that I want to push. One of them is a whole new way of thinking about the forest. Another way is being behind water stewards. Another way is getting behind parents controlling schools and vocational education. Another thing is to try to make sure that we are energy independent as a state. We produce enough electricity and enough gasoline for our people based out of our state. And we need to reform the political process. Those are my five ideas that I think we can be for. And I think if you make your case to the state of California and you go to the declined estate voters and the disillusioned voters who are a part of the Tea Party movement that believe that nobody has any good ideas, all we have are a bunch of Republicans responding to the Democrats' bad ideas. And until we actually are proactive and bring our ideas forward, we're going to continue to have this problem. And I'm scared to death right now that if Republicans get their way and they take over Congress, they're going to do no better job than they did before. Because I'm not hearing those good ideas out of those people yet. I keep hearing them saying, well, we're not as bad as the Democrats. We're not as bad as the Democrats. But where are their ideas? Where are the people out there standing out saying, you know what, we've got to change the nature of government. We've got to change the way we approach things. And we've got to be able to have our own solutions if we really want to have the mantle of government. That's how we took it back in with the contract with America, and that's what Ronald Reagan did, and we need to learn a lesson and go back to that and be real conservatives.
We have another question from the House.
And of course, I agree with what you say because I am a conservative, and I believe that. But I actually have a question about Cliff Wagner. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is he chief of staff for Assemblyman Dan Logue?
No.
He's
no,
not?
No.
Okay, so he just works for you and he doesn't work for any legislator down in the Capitol?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wondered about that.
You bet.
When you say you want to, when you say change electoral process.
Or the governance, right.
For the governance.
Reform.
Now, you know, the thing I see is that, again, whether you like it or not, we're still at this 60-40. The only thing right now, the only power that Republicans, be they, you know, rhinos or conservatives, have in this state legislature is the ability to stop anything from being, you know, the budgets being changed.
Right.
How are you going to have people from the South finally realize that if we clear out the woods, you know, and the undergrowth, that we can use this, one, to prevent fires, and two, for energy via biomass? I mean, that's been something we've been trying to do for years, and I don't think we've moved forward. And more, they've shut down the stocking of lakes and streams because of an injunction put on us from some environmental groups in Oregon. Mm-hmm. We don't have the salmon runs anymore. We've lost gold dredging. I mean, it seems like it's almost a concerted effort from the South to take millions and millions of dollars and jobs from the North. How are you going to change that?
If I were to stand here and say, I'm going to go down and run all these legislative pieces today and get everybody to join me from the Democrat Party, I would be kidding myself. Ronald Reagan didn't worry about convincing the Democrats that his ideas were the best. Either did the contract with America. People are looking for a contrast idea. I believe the declined estates, I believe that the Tea Party people, and I believe Republicans are waiting for somebody to stand up with a vision as to what we need to be about, to what we need to be for. What are our ideas? We can't just have the bad ideas of the Democrats and no ideas of the Republicans and do nothing but vote no and expect to move those numbers that you're talking about, Carl. I really believe that. I believe that if we need to take our mission really to the people. What I would like to do is to take these five ideas, or maybe better ones that you guys come up with, take these five ideas, disseminate them throughout the state of California with all of the grassroots groups, get people to start writing letters to the editor, get newspapers to start carrying these things, do our own ads, take it to the people. That's what That's what Ronald Reagan did. He didn't let the fact that a Democrat-controlled Congress didn't like his ideas stop him. He went with his radio addresses, and he took them to the nation. And the same thing happened with Newt Gingrich, with the contract with America. They didn't try to win over the Democrats in Congress. He went out and took it to the people and said, if you give us the chance to govern, this is what we will do. And I believe that common sense says that we need to do something about our forests burning down. Common sense tells us that we need to do something about our educational system that is failing 80% of our kids who are never going to college but to get no trades in school anymore. The common sense would say we ought to keep some of our water for the wintertime. We don't need to convince liberals that these are all good ideas. They are good ideas. They cut across the spectrum. I believe that these ideas would appeal to everybody, but we've got to speak with a singular voice. He who defines the terms of the debate defines the outcome of the debate. And right now, Democrats are defining the terms of the debate, and we're reacting to their terms. And we're wringing our hands while we could never get past this 40% to 60% number. If we get the state demanding that people implement our ideas, we will see a change in those numbers. Then we can start battling some of those other issues. But until then, all we're left with is sitting there saying, oh gosh, maybe we can hold this up in the budget or that up in the budget. And we're on the fetus defensive mode instead of offensive mode.
Thank you. Okay, we have a question from the audience.
And that's exactly what we like to do here in Free Fire Radio, is to focus, bring people into a fine focus by asking questions from the people. You have a question?
Yes, Rick. You were talking about the 5 points that you have. One of those was energy. Could you tell us a little bit more about your energy solutions for California?
Sure, absolutely. Energy, every few years, as you remember, we run short on energy in California, whether it's electricity or gasoline. Every time the Middle East hiccups, we get $4.50 gas. We get $4.50 gas because we have cut down any new oil draw in the state of California, and we import it all from outside. So every time we turn around, we end up being held over the barrel. No pun intended.
We have being bent over the barrel.
There you are. We have huge reserves off of the state of California of oil. If we just charge a small fee to let people take the state of California's oil, we could bring in $5 to $9 billion to the general fund, therefore helping with this budget imbalance, and we would be self-sufficient with oil. And you can do it all with this new technology. You can go from the shore, go all the way out to get it without having any negative environmental impact. We ought to be pushing for that as Republicans. And I think that the people would be with us if we make our case. We also are a net importer of electricity from other states. When Gray Davis was governor, he deregulated the electricity markets, and yet we were a net importer of electricity. When that happened, outside companies gamed us like Enron, and we ended up with a tripling of our electricity prices simply because we don't produce enough electricity in the state of California to meet our own state's needs currently. Texas did the same thing. They deregulated electricity in Texas, and their prices went down because competition, there was more supply than demand. They competed for one another, and they actually had a dropping of electricity prices. We need to be pushing for all technologies, including nuclear, including any technology that exists that is cost-effective, to build power plants in California to meet California's needs. But we're never going to get these ideas done through the legislature. You're going to have to take it to the people. The people then will have to demand it, and when the people demand it, the legislators will follow. I do not think there's any hope in getting Sacramento just to wake up in an enlightened mood one day and to say, you know what, let's fix this. They won't. The environmental community has too much of a lock on the institution as it currently sits.
Well, we thank you for being our guest today, Rick, and we have to tie up our end of this show.
Yeah, we have about 5 minutes, so if you like, last statement here.
Oh,
so
sure.
You've got a couple minutes, then we can end this thing up.
You bet. Well, we talked a little bit about what's wrong. The fact of the matter is we all know that this country has gone in a world of hurt. There isn't any question. Republicans have lost their way, and I think the Tea Party movement is reflecting that they can't turn to Republicans or Democrats. The first order of business is to return to conservative principles and elect no one that doesn't have those principles. That's the first order of business. The second order of business is to come up with our own ideas on where we want to go if we want to assume the mantle of leadership. If we don't, Republicans are going to repeat the same mistakes that they've done in the past. They, simply being an alternative to bad ideas is not enough. We've got to say what we're about. Plus, we can hold people's feet to the fire about that. The third thing that we need to do is, I believe there's five ideas that we could get behind. We can get behind school reform, where parents control schools like charter schools. We can get behind vocational education. We can get behind water storage. We can get behind defensible forests. We can get behind energy independence. And we can get behind fixing the legislative process, where legislators are no longer able to do their legislative duties, legislation until the second year. Sorry, I was distracted by the camera. Until the second year, and they only do budget and efficiency the first year and shorten the sessions up to 4 months at a time and no fundraising during those 4 months. I think these are all ideas that Californians broadly would be for if we let people know. The last idea is that we need our best and most capable spokespeople to carry these ideas to the public. That simply a generic Republican, if they're just simply nice people, is not enough. We need people who are capable spokespeople for these positions. This is not a job. This is not a popularity contest. This is a job interview. When people run for office at any level, it's a job interview. You're asking them, how have you done with what you've had before? What are your ideas? And do you have the capabilities of being the best messenger? Now, I was able to work on some successful things. We've talked about that. Being able to fix workers' comp, fix some levies, and be able to make some progress on the deficit, at least for a few years. But we need more than that. We need both a proof that you've done something, ideas for the future, and we need to look at it pragmatically as to who would be the best person to carry this out. And I'm talking about these things as being required at all levels of elections, all levels of government, because if you haven't done anything in the past, you're probably not going to do anything to move the ball in the future. So thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to Rick Keene. Thank you, Rick. Our guest today on Free Fire Radio, and of course this will be in the archives, freefireradio.com, as well as probably a clip that'll be up soon, a little 5-minute clip on YouTube. And thank you so much for being part of our show here Fridays. By the way, there's sandwiches over here, Subway, and thank you so much for that. Did we also want to One more time, kudos to Patrick.
We want to, again, thank our brand new mayor, Patrick Henry Jones. And, you know, the thing about it is Patrick took a letter out of Abraham Lincoln, who lost every election he was in until he ran for president. So I guess you just, you know, you peaked too soon here, Patrick. I mean, next year, you know, if you had lost the last one, maybe you could have been president in 2012.
I think it's awesome about your perseverance.
That's right.
Congratulations.
First of all, again, we want to thank our audience for being here, and, you know, Tony, our cameraman, and Brad and Morgan, who are running the board. But mainly thank you all. And Free Fire Radio will also have our other candidate running, Doug LaMalfa. Because we try to get we want to present the information to you all. It's you all make the difference. You all make your decision based on what you hear. Now, next week, what we're going to try and do is we're going to be talking small business here in Reading. And we'd like to be discussing these new plans from the Builders Exchange with Kent Dagg about they've got 10 great ideas. One of them is raising taxes, which, yeah, is that a good idea or do we need that? Okay, we've already heard this one. So I guess Patrick heard that one too. But there's the 9 other ideas that may be something we can look at. Also, we've got a couple of big announcements we're going to be coming through here in the next week or two. So
join us next Friday here at Tobacco and Brew. Again, thank you, Joe and Shelley, and thank you so much for all that you do. Let's keep it going. You know, it's really great to have a forum where you can ask the hard questions, speak your truth, and remember, always show up.
Yes, remember, good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?